Right now in Canada, thousands of people are waiting for a call, a match, a second chance at life. For many, that call won't come in time unless more of us say yes to organ donation. April is Be a Donor Month. National Organ and Tissue Donation Awareness Week is April 19th to 25th, a moment to turn compassion into action. April 7th is Green Shirt Day, inspired by Logan Boulay, whose gift of donation created a ripple effect across our country. One decision can save lives. Register today at beadonor.ca and share your wishes with your family. Be a donor. Be someone's second chance. Welcome to the Living Transplant Podcast, where we take you behind the scenes of the Ajmera Transplant Center at Toronto General Hospital, Canada's largest and most comprehensive transplant program, performing over 700 transplants annually. I'm your host, Candice. Each episode, we share the powerful stories from transplant recipients and living donors, along with insights and education from leading medical professionals. In this episode of Living Transplant, I sat down with Fadia Jerome Smith as she reflected on her journey through transplant, family, and life with chronic kidney disease. From the outpouring of support during her transplant to navigating a return to dialysis years later, Fadia shares what it really means to live this journey over time. She opens up about motherhood, teaching, and learning to let go of control, choosing instead to listen to her body, ask for help, and find peace in what she can control. Through her advocacy work with the ACB Organ Health Committee, Fadia has also found strength in community, using her voice to support others while continuing to navigate her own path. It's an honest conversation about resilience, community, and the reality that transplant is not an endpoint, but a part of a lifelong journey. Please enjoy. Hello, Fadia. Thank you so much for joining us on the pod.
Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to get to sit with you in this context. I know we talk a lot through our ACB Organ Health Committee, but to have just you here and talking is wonderful. So thanks so much for doing this. We appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
We're going to dive right in. We have had your sister Winnie on the podcast, which was fantastic. And we talked a lot about the kidney pair donation program. And we talked about your journey as sisters. Through that transplant journey, I'm wondering if you can take a step back and talk a little bit about that for a couple minutes, that living donor journey, what it meant to you then, what it means to you now, all these years later.
Mm-hmm. I remember having a sort of eagerness to just find answers. And just almost excited to have a resolve, right? So fear was not something that came to mind very often. And I'm very, very grateful for my support system, right? It's really because of them. The few moments that I was really down and out, I had my support system to lean on as well that picked me back up. So those were the things that I remember from the journey and that I cherish the most, right? So I remember even my mother-in-law at one point said, you know, like people make videos online asking for a kidney. And I didn't really have the language then to be like, okay, well, it's not really, I'm not asking for a donor, but it's like more about telling my story, right? And so I knew that like instinctively, I knew that was not, it didn't feel right to ask for a kidney, but okay, well, let me just share what it is that I'm going through and share, you know, like I need prayers, I need support or I need whatever, just, you know,
mm-hmm.
just keep me in your minds. Right. So I remember doing the video and right away, right? I had this person, that person, the next person saying, hey, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do to get involved? I want to help you. How does this thing work? Now that I'm saying this story again out loud, I'm thinking, you know, like no one really asked about like details about what does the transplant look like? Will I have to take medication? No one was worried about the after effects, right? Everyone was just like, I'm going to help you. What do I need to do to help you? right? No one was really concerned about like how it would affect them, but more so wanting to help me. So that was heartwarming and encouraging. Mm-hmm. And having my sister, my husband, my family by my side was just made the whole journey like very, very, it was memorable. I don't want to say smooth,
right?
But memorable. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I talk to people all the time who step up to be donors. And I feel like often it's us recipients who are more nervous about the donor journey than they are, that they are just saying, I want to help the person I love, get me through this, let me do what I want to do. Whereas we're asking, well, what's going to be the effect on their life? And, you know, what is going to happen to them? I don't want to go through this if it's going to harm them. And they're saying, get me through this so I can get this kidney to my loved one, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And definitely hearing that from Winnie when we talked on the podcast, and anytime I've seen her, you know, that passion to do this and mm-hmm. you know, to be able to be that person for you is pretty, pretty remarkable.
Yeah, like I have that in my head. It's like, well, it doesn't matter. I'm doing it. I don't care what everyone says. Like, yes. That was her attitude, right? It doesn't matter. And she, like, growing up, we weren't the type of children that really spoke against what our parents asked of us.
Mm.
Or like whatever our parents said, we did what they told us to do, right? So even as adults, like being so vocal, it's like, mom and dad, like, you're just gonna have to sit over there and watch from afar if you're not with us, type of thing, right? My mom was a little bit more, you know, like easy to kind of get on board. My dad was the one who was very, very afraid and, you know, like did not spend a lot of time at the hospital just because he doesn't like this. But very, very fearful, and rightfully so, right? Like you have two of your children going through this.
For sure.
It's scary.
Yeah. And so did he eventually come around to that idea of the donation, or was it still kind of an ongoing?
It was an ongoing thing. I think other people's perspective and talking to other people just calmed his fears and helped him accept what I was going through personally, and like what both of us were going through at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now when he talks about us, it's with great pride, especially when he talks about Winnie, it's like my daughter Winnie saved, you know, like it's kind of that language, right? So but it took a while to get there, right? Because their mm-hmm. parents, they worry about their children. We're still, you know, 8 and 5 to them, right? We're still a little
absolutely
baby. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen this trend on social media where it will show like, this is the person that you think I see. And it shows, you know, a grown up walking across a graduation stage or something. And then it says, but this is who I see. And then it shows a video of like that little kid being that little baby to them. Right. So like, you know, as a mom, you know, you still see him as the teeny tiny baby, even though now he's, you know, going to be a teenager. They never stop being our babies.
Correct. Yeah. Every time I think of Wes, I think of Wes then, and he was fairly young. He was 2-3 years old. So he was really, really young, but, and he had people around, so he didn't really understand what I was going through. So now that he's older and when I explained to him, well, actually just today, cause he just came back from Muay Thai and he's complaining about whatever. And I'm telling him, you know, like you have to find the joy in the pain, even sometimes, right? It's a mind over matter type of situation. Not all situations. Sometimes if you feel like crying, just cry. Or if you're angry, just be angry. But there are times where it's just for a short moment, right? It will pass. And that I told him, you know, like I had a whole surgery and I wanted to laugh. I couldn't even laugh. And then you just have to laugh because it's funny. So you brace yourself and you laugh and then you're like, ow, 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 ow. It will pass.
Yes, exactly. Like that whole image of, you know, post-transplant, us holding that pillow to our stomach because we got to laugh or you got to sneeze or you got to do whatever you got to do, right? But it's a good metaphor for life, right? Sometimes you just got to hold on to that pillow and laugh.
To hold on to that pillow and the laugh has to come out. The sneeze has to come out.
Yeah.
And you can look at the light as long as you want.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. So hold on to that pillow.
Yeah. That's good advice. Now, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, motherhood, the two of us just talking about it, you know, being a mom, you being a teacher and you know, having kidney disease, all three of these things kind of collide in different ways. And I think balance is an overrated word always because I never think we're ever going to have proper balance. But, you know, how do you keep, I guess, peace with all of these pieces in your family, in the classroom, and then also listening to your body and making sure you're not, you know, pushing past your limits?
I have to be completely honest. This is a concept that I finally accepted. I've always I understood it, but putting it into practice, it took me a long time to get there, and I'm still trying to wrap my brain around it. Even now, I'm like, okay, well, what does I every day I think about work, right? Like, what is work going to look like? Should I be modifying this? Should I? And I'm second guessing myself, and then wondering, well, how will that affect me as a career person? How does that affect my financial, you know, like how does it affect so many things, right? So I don't really like using the word balance neither, but it's your body. Unfortunately, my body told me to go sit down somewhere, right? Like I it was a harsh reality that I needed to listen to my body. I'm not 22 anymore. I'm not even 30. And right, like the older we get, your body just needs to settle differently, and accepting that okay, the dance class that I would do three times a week at full force,
right?
I can't. I cannot. And that's okay. You can't go to your dance class. Go to the dance class. But you will slow down and accepting that. And I think that's where I'm at now. I'm in the accepting stage. And I don't always want my body to shut down before I settle differently. Right.
I
think I'm tired of that, like the shock of, oh, I'm too sick to do this thing anymore. Let me stop. So when it comes to work, when it comes to like home life, I've adopted this philosophy of just like, you know what? I'm doing the bare minimum. Sometimes the bare minimum looks extra, but I have to just, I used to go over the top all of the time, every day, all day. Let me not show up for everything for everybody all the time. Show up for myself first, so I can show up for others. And I don't have to show up for the 52 students that I have every day, right? And I felt horrible. There are days that I would go into to work and like I don't have energy. I just want to sleep. And the kids saw that, and I was cold and whatnot. I just had to accept, okay, what can I do today to be the best version of myself, have compassion for myself as well as showing up for my class, showing up for my family, showing up for my own child. I need to change my expectations. Right.
Right.
If we're going to talk about like education words, we're going to change the expectations.
Yeah.
Not really lower them, but just change the expectations so that I'm not always trying to reach a level 4. A level 2 is actually acceptable in real life. Right. It means there are things that you're going to be missing, but it's so that you can be at the best version of yourself as you can be.
Yeah, that's, I think that's really good advice, not just for, you know, kidney patients, but for everybody,
For
right? Like,
everyone.
yeah, we try so hard to like get the grind, and you know what the kids say, like get your bread or whatever it is.
I don't want to bun bread, no nothing. I just want to.
Yes, we need peace, right? And yeah, and I think too often we think go, 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 and then crash and I'll deal with it. But we don't have to live that way, right? We don't have to push ourselves to where we crash and then we have to miss out on things rather than choosing what we're going to decide what we have the energy for, right? Yeah. Yeah, such a better way to live.
Yeah. I used to be like, I couldn't stand dishes in the sink. Could not stand it. I'm like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to wash the dishes. And I'm like, I'm literally shaking. My body is shaking. And like, must wash the dishes. Why?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's not going to stop the earth or the planet from spinning because there's dishes in the sink.
Why?
Yeah.
And if you eat pizza 5 days a week, not the best. Also, you know, like this, it was just for this week. It's not for the rest of your life. It's just
this week.
Just move on. Like the shame and the guilt, right? That we kind of rehearse in our minds. Yeah. Okay. 2 months ago, it was terrible. Let's leave that over there. And let's just make different choices. Let's prepare better. Something that I never, you know, that I never used to do is ask for specific help, right? I would ask my friend, I'm like, hey, I don't have the energy to cook. Can you bring me food?
What? Yeah.
I never used to do that. So I'm pat myself on the shoulder.
You should, because, you know, also I always tell people the people who you're asking to do that feel so good about being able to help you too. Like when my family has specific needs and I'm able to, I'm the go-to chicken pot pie maker. Yeah. So when I'm able to make a chicken pot pie and drop it off, it makes me feel so good because that's a love language of mine, right? To cook for somebody and say, here you go. Now you don't have to worry about this, right?
Yeah.
So
you're
helping yourself, but you're also helping the person who wants to help.
Who wants
you.
To help. Exactly.
Right? Giving them
something very specific and impactful, right? Like you don't
want
flowers. I love flowers. I love plants.
Mm-hmm.
It won't feed my stomach.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's knowing when and what, right? Mm-hmm. At the right time. Mm-hmm.
And people don't always know what to do. Actually, most of the time, people don't know what to do with us, right? Like, I have tons of people in my life. I'm post-transplant now, but like if I have a flare up or something's going on, they have no clue and they'll say, let me know if you need help, you know, instead of, you know, saying, hey, do you want me to drive you to this appointment? Do you want some food? Do you want me to take Clementine to the park? Do you want me to, you know, come and, you know, do your laundry, whatever it is, right? Instead of, you know, the people who are really in it know how to ask those things, but a lot of people don't know what to say or what to do. It's just a lot of, let me know if I can help. And it's a pure intention. But, you know, for us, it's, you know, we like you said, it's a lot of shame around asking for help. So being able to push that aside and say, yeah, you're good at making that. Can you bring that over tonight? Is such help for everybody, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, going through the journey, the other thing that I think a lot of people don't quite get is it's a lifelong journey, right? Like we are not transplanted and then we're healed for life. We don't have a magical cure that, you know, stops it all in its track. Unfortunately, it's an ongoing journey. And that's why they changed the word to renal replacement therapy, right? Because it's dialysis, it's medication, it's transplant, it's all of these things wrapped into one. With what you have been through, and now that you're back on dialysis, what has kind of helped ground you and get you now to this place? You mentioned the word acceptance. Like that's a big place to get to, right? How has that come for you?
I think, like I was saying, the first time around, I was like, go, go, go. Let's find a solution. Let's figure this out. There will be a resolve. And then I can move on to the next thing. now that I'm 10 years older, wiser, smarter, more beautiful.
Yes.
I have, it's almost like, okay, clearly I cannot control this thing.
Right. Yes.
And being able to name that and being able to, I have an issue with control. So it's recognizing that, one, that I'm not in control of the things that are always happening outside of me. What I am in control of is what I say to myself. And honestly, slowing down allowed me to pay attention to what I was saying to myself. It's normal to feel nervous because this is not a normal situation, but it's my life. So what can I do right now to deal with this? Oh, sleep? Go to sleep. Rest? Okay, rest. Go to the mall and walk around? Go to the mall and walk around. I was just trying to take care of what was happening here. I remember the first time I was on dialysis, I was even thinking of switching careers. I'm like, maybe I should become a doctor myself. Maybe I need to become a naturopath expert in kidney disease because I want to be in control, right? And this time around, I'm like, oh, no, the gifts that I have serve this part of my life, like my community, teaching and so on. What can I do to take care of myself? Okay, it's my mind. Let me focus on that. There are things that I'm not in control of, but what I am in control of is how I respond to things and what I'll allow to fester in my mind.
Yeah, that whole bit about control. I mean, we talk about that a lot when I talk to people about the wait, like thinking about the wait for transplant. And there's a lot of frustration of, I can't control this. I don't know how long this is going to take. I don't know when this appointment is. I don't know how to do this. I don't know, like, so much fear, anxiety, and lack of control. And the patients that I meet who are most centered and most calm and doing the best in their life have taken control of something, like you said, outside of that health journey. There's so many things that we can do while we're on dialysis and live super healthy lives outside of our kidney disease, because we are so much more than our diagnosis, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty much the last bullet point that I want on my resume of who I am, right?
Yeah. And it's such a, like, another term that I'm like, I understand the word, but I don't fully know how it impacts me and what it truly means for me. And it's the word disability, right? It's an invisible disability. I'm like, okay.
Right.
Okay. And then it's like, okay, well, what is a disability? What does that mean? Even now, I'm the wheels are turning. That's hard sometimes to express.
Yes. And especially for personalities like yourself, like myself, like, we are peppy and we want to go and we want to explore life and be silly and go wild and, you know, get as much as we can out of it. And sometimes our bodies are like, I love that you want this. This is fun. But it's time for you to rest now. Like, we're taking a break here, and that can be tough.
Yes. Exactly. Like, to go back to the whole, like, being in the workspace, I would say that was the hardest thing, right? When I finally shared with people that, you know, like, I'm not well because of, they're like, yeah, but you're like, yeah, but you're doing, you know, you're coaching dance. Oh yeah, but you're like, you look fine.
You don't look sick. Yeah. How many of us have heard that? You don't look sick.
You don't look sick. Exactly.
And you mentioned too, you know, your support network and how important that is. And you mentioned the ACB Organ Health Committee, and you're smiling now. And so am I, thinking about this group. Has your journey as a patient been shaped by that group? And, you know, how have they supported you, and, you know, how have you been able, I guess, to support others in advocacy work because of this group that has gone really, I think, from a committee to more like a support group and a group of friends that happens to do advocacy work?
It's definitely shaped my advocacy and what that looks like in my life. I always saw myself as a advocate for justice, for this and that, in my own weird way, or in my classroom, or in my own life. So with healthcare, because it's so personal, I still have the, it was you and another individual, I can't remember their name. It's like, you should write a book. I'm like, so like, I still have that memory, like in far in my brain, thinking, okay, well, what would that look like, you know, for students, because that's where the education should happen. And it really does, right? It always happens when we're sick. That's when people find out, oh, I have two kidneys. Oh, that's what they do. Oh, I need my kidneys. Got it. The other part that also brings me joy, it's like I said earlier, we're all very, very different. We're all different ages. We're all, you know, different walks of life, but there's just one thing that unites us. And so therefore that puts us on the same path. And I think whenever people come together to work on one thing, one specific thing, beauty always comes out of it, right? Obviously for the betterment of others. I think our impact is felt in the community, and having a space where people can go to, not just ourselves, but like other people can go to and check us out, it creates that, right? That snowball effect where people can talk and share and ask questions and what have you. Yeah, I'm really, really proud of our group. Really proud of our group. It's a small and mighty group. it's an amazing opportunity to work for other people in that way, and hopefully encourages and inspires others.
And I think it definitely does. You know, even though, like you said, it's a small crew, they are very, very mighty. And yes, like being able to, you mentioned this too, like sit in a room, look around and think to yourself, if I open my mouth and I say something, people aren't going to look at me like I'm crazy. People are going to nod their heads and they're going to immediately understand before they even answer what I have to say. Like, there's such power and strength in feeling like you are going to be seen when you speak.
Yeah, that's huge. I remember the first time I had to share with others that I was sick, and people didn't understand, right? Like, oh, I have this disease. It's a rare disease at that. And we, as a people, as Black people across the diaspora, we have all sorts of remedies and so on. And I, you know, I have some at home as well, but they don't all help the same way all the time, every time, for all things. So you can, you know, provide me other type of support. If it's 2 o'clock and I look like I'm going to fall asleep, get somebody else in the classroom. That's what I mean. I don't need the celery juice. It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, when you think about the patients who come to our ACB summit, who have been on our webinars, or, you know, who reach out from, you know, different Green Table Talk episodes, even if you think about the patients and the families that are navigating this disease and, you know, trying to trust in the system, how do you think that your experience can really shape the conversations that you think we should be having about culturally safe care, about equity, about a lot of the things that we talk about in our ACB Organ Health Committee meetings?
Yeah, even at work, I've adopted this kind of approach to things, that like I'm the expert, mm-hmm. In my classroom or in my space. Parents know what their child is doing, but when they're in my care and they're with me for 8 hours, I trust me, I know. Right? this specific thing, I know what I'm talking about. I am giving you this information. Let's work together, right? It's the same thing for ourselves, right? Like, we are the experts for our own health. We know what a 7 feels like. And sometimes a 7 is not that bad, but sometimes a 7 is the worst feeling possible. So if I'm telling you this is where I'm at, right? So it is the, we used the word advocacy earlier. I think through our stories, through my story, you know, people, hopefully it's an example of how to advocate for yourself. I remember being very confused by the nutritionist, the first team that I had. And she's telling me, oh, well, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. I'm like, yeah, but that's my entire diet. That conversation, I want our people to be able to have with their healthcare professionals.
Yeah, standing up for yourself, asking questions, right? We talk about that so much. I don't understand what this medication is for. Instead of going home, and sometimes patients don't take it because they don't know what it is. Instead of sitting in your chair and saying, okay, I understand I need to take a new medication. What is it? What am I using it for? So that it's, like you said, like a partnership between your doctors and the patient, and not just, I don't understand it, so I'm not going to do it. And then things don't go well for patients when that happens, right? And they don't go well for the team either, right? Because the team's goal is really to keep us as healthy and happy as possible. And if you're not working as a team, it's not going to happen, right? So really, yeah, advocating for yourself. And we talk about that a lot at our summits, right? I find like we're always talking about advocacy and, you know, how do we do that better for ourselves, for sure.
If you come in prepared, you know, how long will the recovery be? You know, like what is the care when I go home? What do I need to do? You know, like, what's the alternative? To come prepared. I think that's really important.
That's good advice. And, you know, thinking about your journey, I think most of my kidney friends, you know, who have been through this journey since they were young, have had 1, 2. I have a friend who has had 4 kidney transplants, you know, been through this journey, been on and off dialysis. You know, sometimes it can be really scary when we are first diagnosed, or even, you know, right after post-transplant, thinking, how do I manage all of these different stages? Because we're going to come in and out of them, right? It's not a linear path, unfortunately, for kidney patients. If you could talk to the patient who, you know, maybe they just started dialysis for the first time, or maybe they have just been to an appointment and, like we talked about, they are, you know, feeling like they're drowning in all of this information. Or maybe they just found out that, yes, they are going to need to start dialysis. What would your advice be to the patients who are going through it?
I would say, first and foremost, find a friend. Find a person that you know. Like, the person doesn't have to be, like, a medical professional. It doesn't have to be somebody, but just somebody that, you know, gets you. They can navigate around the big feelings, the small feelings, and all of it in between. And it depends on the appointments, right? So have them either come with you and take notes. And you just listen to what the person has to, you know, the doctor has to say, or the nurse has to say, and have your friend take notes and have the friend ask questions on your behalf. You're talking about prednisone? What does that mean? Steroids? Right. Right. Yes. That will ask the straight up question. And because they don't know, you may have all the information, right, but they don't. And so they'll ask. And sometimes the doctor will actually explain it differently to them. So I would say to have that person to come with you to the appointments. But in between appointments is to seek out those support groups like the ACB committee. Hospitals, they all have some type of a kidney group, that talk about dialysis, that talk about transplant, just for education. Their support group, their peer groups that people can join and talk with them, right, about whatever that, or maybe just listen to, right? They can join a group and just listen in to the stories that are being shared in that space. But to start, ABC YouTube channel has those stories right there, right? The Green Table Talk is right there. You can click on it, watch it, and knowledge, laughs, tears, the whole gamut, right? So I would say that in between visits, to do some research, but also to, like I said earlier, the things that you can control, control that, right? Like the things that you say to yourself about yourself, super, 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 super important. Rest. I feel like everyone is saying it, but not everyone is practicing it. But if you need to sleep 12 hours, I'm not a doctor, but I'm just going to say sleep 12, like sleep, just
yeah,
because you need to rest, especially if you're, if you've started dialysis and you're in center or you're doing PD and you're feeling like your body is just running low on energy. First of all, share that with your team that you don't have energy. But also rest. The dishes are going to be fine.
The dishes are going to be fine. Yes. Yes.
The dishes are going to be fine. And your kid who's hungry, you know, like you call Auntie Sue who can make the pot pie and the chicken pot pie, and then tell Auntie Sue to bring the chicken pot pie. And if it's ordering pizza, then pizza it is for today.
Yes.
But rest your mind, rest your body, control what's happening between your two ears, mm-hmm. and take care of your heart, and watch the ACB YouTube channel.
Yes. Amazing, Fadia. Yes, we will definitely put the link for the ACB Organ Health channel in this.
Like, follow, share.
All the good goods. Yes.
Comments. Yes. Thank you.
Amazing. Well, thank you for taking the time today to chat. It's always amazing to get time with you. And I think people who are listening are really going to appreciate this one. You know, you're so honest and raw about this. And I think it's really healing for a lot of people to hear that.
Yeah, that's the only way I know how to be. So gotta tell the peoples.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Fadia. We really appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
You're so welcome.
Thanks. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Living Transplant Podcast. If you did, please rate, leave us a review, and share with your friends. Don't forget to subscribe to Living Transplant wherever you're listening today. If you have any ideas for podcast episodes, please reach out to us at livingorgandonation@uhn.ca. For information about living organ donation, you can visit us at www.livingorgandonation.ca. Special thanks to Bespoke Productions for editing this episode and for production support. I'm your host, Candace Coughlin. Thanks for spending your time with us.